Bobby Jones was considered the greatest golfer of his era, perhaps the greatest amateur golfer of all time, and he was exposed to the game at a very early age.
That's right. He grew up in Atlanta to a prominent family. His father was a lawyer. His father joined the Atlanta Athletic Club, and the Athletic Club owned the East Lake Country Club. So they summered, if you will, out in East Lake. And it's kind of interesting to think about DeKalb County being semi-rural at the time, rolling hills and so forth. So at a very early age, Bobby Jones began playing golf at the East Lake Country Club.
As a teenager, he's very good. I mean, he's playing all over the country. He's involved in some national tournaments.
That's right. You know, by the age of 14, he's a celebrated young golfer. He's widely projected to be the next star in the sport. It takes him a while to get off, though. I mean, he has to control his temper and other kind of indiscretions at the outset. And finally, he does break through. And over a course of 7 years, from 1923 to 1930, he wins 13 major championships, including the U.S. Amateur, the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the British Amateur, which were considered the four big tournaments of the day. And in 1930, he kind of caps it off by winning all four of those tournaments in a single year, the so-called Grand Slam.
The British Open, the British Amateur, U.S. Open, U.S. Amateur.
That's right. He comes back, and then he gets a ticker tape parade in New York, and he gets a huge reception when he comes back at Terminal Station in Atlanta, just this enormous outpouring of enthusiasm for Bobby Jones. In a decade, the 1920s, when it's kind of sometimes called the golden age of sports, with these figures like Babe Ruth and Jack Dempsey and the tennis player Bill Tilden, football player Red Grange, Bobby Jones is right up there in the pantheon of these celebrity sports stars.
I heard an interesting tidbit about Bobby Jones in the year that he won the Grand Slam. Don't know if this is true or not, but it sounds great, great urban legend. He placed a bet with British bookmakers that he would win all four, and the odds were 50 to 1, and he won $60,000, which in 1930...
would be probably about $500,000 today or something like that. You know, it's... Yeah. That is true from what I've read as well, that he was very confident in his abilities. He was also accompanied by a local sports writer, O.B. Keeler. And, some people say that Jones made Keeler and some people say that Keeler made Jones. But Keeler was sort of the surrogate father figure who would travel around the world with Jones and logged over 100,000 miles as his companion, basically, and became very, very well known as kind of the chronicler of Bobby Jones and kind of introduced Jones to the world.
What I find interesting about Bobby Jones is he was an amateur golfer. He played competitive golf, but he wasn't a professional. And he would win the tournaments, and he really only played during the warm weather months because he was a practicing attorney.
That's right. He had gone to Georgia Tech and received a degree in engineering and then actually received a degree in literature from Harvard and then returned to Emory for legal studies and passed the bar. So he was a practicing attorney with a family. He played in the summer months. So it's sort of the era of the gentleman golfer, in a sense, you know, the true amateur. And that was one of Jones's appeals. Then he quits after winning the Grand Slam at the age of 28 at the absolute peak of his career. The only other person I can think of doing something like that is the baseball pitcher Sandy Koufax, who quit at the peak of his career.
From the Dodgers, yeah.
But Koufax at least had an elbow injury. Jones at that time was perfectly fit. And so that added to sort of the mystique of Bobby Jones and the attraction and the appeal, the sort of the iconic nature of Bobby Jones.
But he didn't give up golf.
He didn't give up
golf. No one ever gives up golf, no.
Apparently not. He was one of the architects of Augusta National Golf Course, which, of course, led to the Masters tournament being commenced in 1934. And he came out of retirement to play in the first Masters and would appear there regularly over the years in a sort of a ceremonial sort of way. He made an immense amount of money off a series of short instructional films that he did on how to putt and things like this, and wrote innumerable articles and books on golf as well. So he actually, for an amateur, he made quite a lot of money off of his golf-related activities. But again, it all contributed to this really iconic kind of quality. He also was a Renaissance man. He liked opera. He liked high culture. He was not only, quote unquote, an athlete.
No downside to Bobby Jones, maybe an early temper when he was a kid.
And you read through the literature on Jones, and this comes across again and again and again. And at the same time, you know, he's sort of this interesting combination of sort of aristocratic guy and regular guy at the same time. And I think that, the combination of the two sort of was very appealing and certainly became the stuff of legend.
Adds to the whole mystique of the Roaring Twenties, larger than life.
That's right. I mean, he very much is a figure of the Roaring Twenties, the Jazz Age, you know, this sort of period of prosperity after the dislocation of the First World War and before the Great Depression, and very much an embodiment. He's also, I think, for Atlantans, you know, as Atlanta was sort of striving to become a nationally known city, he was, you know, an iconic figure. I mean, you could argue, arguably, that Jones was the leading iconic figure in the city before Martin Luther King.
Cliff Kuhn, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.